Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
It's a live broadcast of the Media Project coming to you from the Linda. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Very kind. Hello, folks. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartuck, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, don't you know?
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Hello.
And Rosemary Armeo, the director of the journalism program at UAlbany.
Hello.
Hello. We are here before this live audience, so we are actually on tape as you hear this on the radio, because of the impending concert called The Armed Man, A Mass for Peace by Carl Jenkins, a terrific piece of work featuring Albany Pro Musica that will be 7:30 p.m. at RPI's Experimental Media and Performing Arts Center on May the 6th. But we're here to talk about issues involving the media and reconciliation.
And if you're listening to this program anywhere in the United States other than the capital region, get on a plane and come on.
Yeah, come on to see what's going on in New York's capital region. We are grateful for our listeners around the country as well. So here we are having an opportunity to talk about what role the media might play in a society riven by controversy, some controversy, of course, created by the reporting of the media. Those of us who are practitioners in this business are often derided as being the progenitors of fake news. You know, during the campaign, there was a great deal of what was referred to as fake news. That's stuff in which there were propagandists and pranksters who were spreading fabricated stories to exploit readers' biases. And then once that became an issue, quickly the president-elect at that time and his supporters sort of repurposed the phrase as a cudgel to bash what I would say are truthful news stories, to the point that now the FCC has been getting a spate of complaints about so-called fake news, notably from people who are complaining about the left-leaning media, right? Mm-hmm. So is this a problem? I mean, is there really a lot of fake news that is dividing the country, or is there something else that we're witness to?
Yeah, there is a lot of fake news. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, you're seeing a lot of it. You saw it all through the election, the campaign. And the phrase first came out in about October of last year. And because we're Americans, we have to discuss the definition. Like, where does it come from? What does it really mean? Yes, there always have been hoaxes, tricksters who have tried to get across on the media. Yes, that's always happened. Yes, we've always had propaganda. But what's new, what we're seeing now that we never did before, is this nexus of technology that allows you to put out articles that look very real and get it out fast and wide. So there's this huge spread of these stories, and the social media owners did not pay any attention to it as well we even wanted them to. We don't want them involved in censorship or in looking at what should be printed and what should not. So the result are, and I bet you all have friends who have come to you with just outlandish, ridiculous stories that they wholeheartedly believe, and that is really dangerous. And then you add on to that what Rex just mentioned, which is that the Trump administration has commandeered the phrase, and they use it now every time there's a story that they do not like, which are most stories done by the newspapers these days. So it's a very complex issue because we don't want to be regulated. We don't want somebody to say, you can't print that story because we don't think it's true. On the other hand, we don't want you printing stories that aren't true. So.
Now, I know the purpose of this is reconciliation. Nevertheless, and I don't want to be anybody to spew anything that is incorrect, but Donald Trump is a big fat liar. And he should know about fake news, you know, because he changes his mind every day. And he tells a whopper, and then he does the opposite of it, and it's got everybody confused. Mario Cuomo, Rex, you may remember, used to have over his desk in the press office, reason with them, it makes them crazy, A.J. Parkinson.
And which A.J. Parkinson he made up.
Right. He also made up. That was fake news also. There was no A.J. Parkinson, it turned out. And it took the New York Times to figure that out. Parkinson sounded right, Parkinson's disease, Parkinson's this, Parkinson's that, but there was no H.A.
What so in I'm, a way, fake news is not new, is what you're saying.
There has what I'm been saying kind of is thing. The biggest faker of all in fake news is Trump, and he has the unmitigated, this is a technical term, chutzpah, to talk about other people doing fake news when he's the biggest faker of all.
Why, by the way, do you suppose he wants to take away public radio's subsidy?
Oh, I have no idea whatsoever.
Okay, just wondering.
But I'm glad you mentioned it, Rex, because because in our last fund drive, so many people were concerned about Trump. I'm sure that's what it was. We had, the only time in our career, a one-time, one-day, million-dollar fund drive, and that was unbelievable. And not only that, but we had a lockbox, and that raised $500,000, and we had $500,000 to go, but we ended too early with the lockbox. It filled up with its half. So what we did is we said to everybody, okay, but now we want to put some money in our First Amendment fund to make sure they can't take the First Amendment away from us. And that came in. The money we were asking for came in 2 days.
You know, I was just actually being a little sarcastic about why do you suppose he wants to take away public radio's funding when you have just gone on a diatribe.
Had you cleared your throat first?
Let's point out that you're offering your personal opinions, though you are the CEO of a not-for-profit that therefore enjoys tax benefits provided by the government. So you just want to make the point that you are expressing your personal opinion, not that
of
the tax-exempt organization.
No, it's empirical proof that he's a big fat liar. I don't work for them, but I do know about how investigative reporting works. There are medical records that show his weight compared to his height, and there are records showing what he said one day and how he changed it the next and what really happened. That's empirically true. He is a big fat liar.
So maybe it's a little early for reconciliation. We'll get to that eventually. You know, and I do actually want to say that when people sometimes say, you know, the media are too hard on people, I think that that is our job, you know. I remember being in a meeting with the late Chief Judge Judith Kaye, wonderful, brilliant woman who was the first woman appointed to the New York State Court of Appeals, the first female chief judge. And I remember being with my friend Tony Merrow, who was then the editor of Newsday, and she said, so what is the state of relations between the media and the courts? And she wanted us to say, oh, we're getting along just fine. And Tony said, appropriately scratchy, because our role is
great.
To be scratchy.
We had a good example of that this week. The actress Erin Moran, she played Joni in, you know, Richie, who was it? In the Happy Days series. Yeah, it's the Trump supporter that she then is in the subsequent program with. Anyway, she died very young. She's only in her 50s. Mm-hmm. And the obits came out, and the obituary writers wrote truthfully about a lot of hardship that she's had since she had the success on TV. She never made it big again after the Happy Days franchise ran out. She's had bouts of homelessness. She had a very sad life. It turned out, we didn't know it at the time, she died of cancer, which we don't even know if she knew about. But at any rate, social media was filled with critiques of the media for being so mean to her. Why did we have to bring up all that stuff? How disrespectful that was. Why couldn't we just present her as a warm and loving human being who many people loved?
Because it's true. Because our job is truth-telling, not being... That was... I'm sorry, you were being rhetorical.
You gave the right answer.
Because it's true, and sometimes it is painful. And we don't... The Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists suggests that we are supposed to minimize harm. That doesn't mean that you stop your truth-telling if it does, in fact, hurt some people's opinions, hurt some people's feelings.
Can I tell you about Oliver Sipple? This is my favorite journalism ethics story. He was the Marine who in the early 80s saved President Gerald Ford's life. He was at an appearance and Mary Jane Moore went like this with a gun. And out of nowhere, this ex-Marine jumps on her arm and deflects the shot, saves the president's life. He instantly became the most famous man in the world. And reporters in San Francisco, where this happened, begin looking into him, and they soon find out that he is a gay man. This is in the mid-80s. We had a whole different perspective on it. And we thought gay people were not really fully human. They were depraved. They certainly were not heroes. And he was not out. His parents didn't know he was gay. His employer did not. But he was known. That's why he was in San Francisco, because he could at least go out in public with his partner. And so Harvey Milk from Albany, the gay activist, wanted the newspapers to know about it because he saw him as a symbol. See, this guy proves we're really humans. We're just like the rest of you. Oliver Sipple said to the newspaper, please don't print this. You'll ruin my life. Would you print it or would you not? Wow. Okay. When I ask students this, they universally say, no, we wouldn't print it. It has nothing to do with what he really did. To me, it would never have occurred not to print it. His gayness was the story. This was the beginning of reporting that really changed the mind of people about gay people. And so they did print it.
Well, if I may be permitted to interject a remark or two here.
I've been hogging the microphone.
No, both
we so
that.
Rarely hear from
no,
you.
No, both of you have. So there are things that we don't do. And these are conventions that I think that, despite what Rex and Rosemary both said and is right, there are things we don't do. When somebody's passing, we don't generally say bad things about them. I mean, go and look at the...
We being media, or we humans in general, you mean?
Well, humans don't, and I don't think the media does. I mean, go read the almost laudatory obits of one of the worst stinkers in the history of the United States, Roy Cohn.
And I don't think those obituaries failed to note his checkered history.
I don't think I'm through with my statement yet.
So, forgive me. Just needs, rush it along.
He needs their time. Just back away.
This is radio, just, you know. We need to move.
So, but the point really is, I remember when Abbie Hoffman died. He wrote, you know, the Steal This Book and all that stuff. And I went on the radio and I said something really, you know, sort of, he wasn't my favorite. And I got clobbered. I mean, clobbered. You never kick a guy on their way out the door. So I think there's a convention, for the most part, if you say something, don't say anything that is really bad, unless really you have to, and it's part of a news story. And you're right, Rex. There was lip service done to his time with McCarthy and all the rest of it. But we do, you know, the newspapers do play with the facts sometimes.
Whoop, 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 whoop. Hold on, we're going to have to do some fact-checking, by the way. We're going to do a little fact-checking on the Roy Cohn obits, by the way, too, just to check up and see if your memory is accurate.
Let me give you, well, it's some of it is, you know, is interpretation.
Ah. What do you mean media playing with the facts? I don't think that's a fair assessment.
So, for example.
Give me one example.
So, for example, yes, I will, right now. Robert F. Kennedy. Remember him? One of the great liberal icons, one of the great guys in history. People have four pictures up in their house of, you know, of their religious symbol, of John Kennedy, of the Pope. And Robert Kennedy could be a stinker, a real stinker. And you may remember who he was counsel to. His name was Joseph R. McCarthy. That seems to have been lost in the popular interpretation of Kennedy.
Okay, now, but you're talking about history at this point, of ancient history to some Americans, of course. What is it that's not truthful about the media reporting about the current administration?
Huh? Do you think someday people have pictures of Trump in their house next to Jesus?
I assure you, Rosemary, I assure you somebody does.
Okay, here's the kind of thing that we're contending with, though. When you talk about fake news, I found this on social media. I was going through, I'm sorry to say, timesunion.com. So I perhaps might be perceived as bearing some responsibility for this, but it's not. What happens is websites sell access to advertisers, and it's labeled. There's a category in a lot of websites, including NewYorkTimes.com, but we have it, and it says sponsored stories by Outbrain. Outbrain is one of those people that buys native advertising. It looks like real stuff. And so you get to 18 co-stars who hated each other in real life, and then that leads you to...
I love those, too.
Yeah,
when
of course.
I'm grading papers. Oh, my God.
It's
I spent an hour yesterday looking at botched... plastic surgery. You know it. You know it. Botched plastic surgery, right? Oh, I love that stuff. And I hate myself for looking at it.
But then you go down the little rabbit hole, because after that, it leads you to more fake news stories. You get to yournewswire.com, where you find that, remember when the Oscar mistake happened on Best Picture, where there's a story that says, well, it was switched at the last minute to avoid a race war. Mm. That's why it was... And, you know, the Pope's giving clemency to pedophile priests. And then I came across this headline. CIA paid $600 million to the Washington Post to publish Trump disinformation. And I thought, well, $600 million paid to the Washington Post by Sean Adeltabatabi. And it quotes a website called www.conservativedailypost.com. This gives you a little signal of what's going on here. And it turns out that there is a computing cloud developed by Amazon Web Services.
Wow.
That has been purchased for all 17 intelligence agencies in the U.S. intelligence community. Now, here's the thing. The owner of the Washington Post is Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos is also, of course, the founder of Amazon. So Amazon gets a contract with the federal government, and this is perceived as a contract. And here's what the story says: an unholy alliance in which Bezos stands to gain many more millions by pacifying and working with the CIA through his publication, The Washington Post, leaks and information that Bezos will publish without question, without proper verification. The CIA now has its own propaganda publication. So this is targeting the CIA, the intelligence community that the president has taken issue with because it is investigating the Russian connection. And that's the kind of misinformation, the kind of fake news that is out there these days mimicking real journalism.
I just want to take a second to thank the audience for being here today, because Rex seldom prepares the way he has.
And as the Allen truth teller, Allen takes it as a point of pride that he can do whole programs without preparing at all. He thinks that's for sissies.
Anybody can prepare, he says.
That is my favorite saying, anybody can prepare. Yeah.
Absolutely. But you know, the danger that we all confront in this era of social media, you're right, Rosemary, when you say, on the one hand, we don't want social media owners censoring, but on the other hand, shouldn't they be doing something to reflect the reality of the power that they have? You know, T.S. Eliot wrote about what he called the wilderness of mirrors, in which we only expose ourselves to perspectives that reflect our own. And that sounds to me like Facebook. And if Facebook doesn't do anything to try to get verification of information, then they're failing in their role as this vast and powerful information medium.
Well, today there was a piece, I'm sure you all saw it as we speak, about a man killing his child and then killing himself live. Was it on Facebook? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there was a real question as to whether or not there ought to be a stop to that. And you guys say?
Well, here's what's happened. Almost all of the money flowing into digital advertising is going to Facebook and Google. And so I did a little work.
Preparation.
You're right. I did
preparation.
Preparation. Yeah. That's
yeah, right.
Right. So, you know, since...
Bless your heart.
Since 2000, the number of journalists in newsrooms across America has been cut nearly in half. Nearly in half, about 30,000 jobs have disappeared from America's newspapers like mine. And so the local media are in effect collapsing because the advertising dollars are going to digital. But even though, you know, we're all trying to be very aggressive with our digital products and everything to draw advertising dollars, that's not where it's going. Of the $60 billion spent on digital advertising in 2015, across millions of websites by millions of advertisers, $36 billion, 60% of that went to just two companies, Facebook and Google. And it's not just big companies. A quarter of Facebook's digital ad income is from local businesses. And so if these big digital behemoths are eating our lunch, they're killing local media. So yes, I think there ought to be some responsibility. Should it be regulated by the federal government? I'm not saying that.
No.
No, but I do think they ought to hire editors to pay attention to content the same way we in our business hire editors to try to tell the truth.
That's the whole problem. They've been attempting to do regulation using bots, using automation, and you cannot refine it enough. Facebook went through a whole thing where they were trying to cut out obscenity, a worthy goal. We don't want porn on Facebook. So no frontal nudity, no frontal female nudity. Makes sense, right? Until you think, remember the famous napalm picture, the girl running from the Vietnam era? That was banned from Facebook for a while, because it was a stupid machine that made it. You do need people. And the platforms, we're only beginning to see signs of this, are hiring journalists who have been let go from newspapers, who don't have outlets to go to. They have to be hired by the platforms.
So, Rex, I just want to get on back to your question. We all realize in this room, of course, that this is a very tough time for print newspapers and for newspapers with digital and the rest of it. But how would you change that?
I'm glad you asked. I would change it by drawing on the same tactic that you use, which is philanthropy. See, public radio draws upon the goodwill of its audience to support itself.
Yeah.
And here's a bit of philanthropy that would be useful. So we talk about all this money being siphoned off by the digital biggies. So talk about the big four: Google, Facebook, Verizon, and Apple. So if you took the leaders of those four businesses,
yes,
and they put the equivalent of 1% of their profits for 5 years into American journalism, if they created a foundation for American journalism, 1% of their after-tax profits, not their gross, for 5 years, it would transform American journalism for the next century.
How so, Rex? What would you do with it?
You would create a fund to support probably not-for-profit newsrooms. I don't think that the money would necessarily go to my newspaper. Maybe it would go to your newsroom.
Well, Rex, you just keep your hands off the not-for-profit stuff.
But, you know, let's think about this. In the 19th century, the robber baron Andrew Carnegie refurbished his reputation. I mean, we'll see what his obits said at the time, by giving away his wealth. He built 3,000 public libraries around the country. I mean, Andrew Carnegie was a terrible man until he started to give away his money.
That was remarkable.
And he said, surplus wealth is a sacred trust which its possessor is bound to administer in his lifetime for the good of his community. So that is the challenge that ought to face Zuckerberg and the widow of Steve Jobs.
Let me make sure I understand what's going on here. You're telling us that you think that there's a new model that could be emerging, right? Which
yes.
is a not-for-profit model for newspapers. Sounds good to me. But of course, we all know that with all the blues and crying and stuff that goes on with you guys, you're still making a lot of money. You're still making a lot of money, right? You are making money on the Times Union, aren't you?
Well, it is a privately owned for-profit enterprise.
Precisely. So that's my point. Would you be willing to give up that privately owned for-profit enterprise in order to resuscitate American journalism?
I'm not the owner. I'm an employee. It's not up to me to
give
it up.
Yeah, but he asked you. Would you do it if you were the owner?
I were the owner of the newspaper, I think I would. I kind of feel like a pilot of a disabled plane. I think you fly it to the ground.
You let us in here, Rex.
You do your very best, and that's what we are doing. You know, we are turning out unparalleled journalism in this community, with all due respect.
With all due respect, you're doing exactly that. I love the investigative reporting that you do, and you continually come up with stuff.
Notwithstanding, thank you. Thank you.
Well, there is the BBC model where the money, the charitable loan, if you will, comes from the government, and we have resisted that for years. So what you're proposing is difficult because you're asking one privately owned company to give money to support another one. The difference is that Google and Facebook particularly, but all of them really, would not exist except for the content that they continue to leech from your struggling company.
That is correct. Yeah, there was a study done in Baltimore a few years ago of all the enterprise journalism that was produced in the community over a year. Enterprise journalism is the stuff that isn't just the breaking news, the car accidents and the shootings and so on. Enterprise are where the journalists actually go out and dig up stories and so on. And they found out that in Baltimore, 2/3 of the enterprise reporting comes from a single source, and that, of course, is the Baltimore Sun.
The newspaper.
Rosemary is an alum of the Baltimore Sun. And that is true of newspapers all across the country. Everywhere you turn, and people who say, well, I get my news from Facebook or from the internet, don't realize they're getting their news from newspapers.
In this past election, we heard lots about how the real story was missed. We didn't go to the Rust Belt. We didn't talk to disaffected ex-factory workers who are never going to get their jobs back, or to coal miners. And there's a reason for that. How many reporters have we lost in the last few years? We are not going there, and local news is struggling. And there's nobody at the national level that picked that up. That's a big failing.
And I know we're out of time, but I wanted to say really quickly, if the theme of today's special media project is reconciliation, it is interesting to me. When I first started, the reason I invented this show, The Media Project, was because I was sick and tired of being condescended to by the print media. And I wanted to say, okay, if they can critique us, we can critique them, and we can all be happy together. And now, I've never seen anything like it. Everybody is cooperating with everybody.
True.
You know, without Rex, without his staff being on programs like this and our dealing in any way we can to help them, that is really a remarkable turn of events, I think.
Oh, that's very kind. And with that, we're actually out of time. With special thanks to our producer, David Gustina, today's engineer, Matthew Plummer, here at the Linda, and the director of the Linda is Carl Blackwood. So we're really grateful to our audience across the country and here at the Linda on behalf of Albany Pro Musica and the folks who are putting on The Armed Man, who are producing and bringing you this. Thank you all for joining us this week on The Media Project.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.